This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick, filling in for John Hockenberry. We thank you so much for listening today. Voices from around the nation and families in Orlando reeling, and the country now coping with the worst mass shooting in American history and what appears to be the worst terrorist attack on U.S. soil since 9/11. There may never be a real answer to just how radicalized this gunman was, whether he was a real ISIS terrorist or mentally disturbed or a deadly combination of the two. Is a call to police swearing allegiance to the Islamic State enough to make you part of that grim team? Maybe. Certainly, Omar Mateen had a history of interest in radical Islam and a history of interest from the FBI. We will talk about terrorism and national security and guns and radicals all this hour. But whatever else this attack was, it is also the deadliest attack on the LGBTQ community in this country's history. It happened in a place, the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, that is supposed to be a safe place for LGBTQ people to be free and open about who they are and to be together while they're doing it. We begin with some people with very close ties to that community. With me in the studio is Daniel Leon Davis, an Orlando native who frequented the Pulse nightclub. And with me from Orlando is Earl Johnson. He's development manager at Zebra Coalition, a LGBT plus youth program and social services network. Daniel and Earl, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Hello, Todd. Thank you.
Daniel, I want to start with you. You wrote an article for Fusion that people can read online. You said that Pulse was where I learned to love myself as a gay man. Pulse was where I learned to love my community. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, of course. I think everything, I processed everything as I was writing the piece yesterday. And what really hit home was this idea that growing up, particularly in a black and brown community, there's this need to be hyper-masculine, right, in order to succeed. And so Pulse, interestingly enough, I grew up really like hating on Pulse because I was like, oh, that's the macho thing to do, right? Like, of course, we're going to talk about the gay club and the men at the gay club. And as it turns out, I ended up being one of those men, right, that frequented frequented Pulse. And so it became home.
You said not only did you frequent the place, but it became a place of I don't want to use cliches like a haven for you, but you really describe how it became more than just a place to drink and dance.
Of course. I think I was talking to my friends yesterday, and when I was there last, essentially, I was there like maybe 3 to 4 times a week, right? Like, this wasn't just a club, right? Like, this is also where people, it is a safe haven. It's where people felt safe. It's where I felt safe. And so often, like, it was also about conversations that were had in those rooms, right? Conversations during the drag shows that were had in those rooms as well.
So 3 to 4 times a week doesn't mean you were partying too much. It means it was a community center.
It really was in a lot of ways.
Earl, describe what you're hearing now in the community and how people are coping in Orlando.
I can echo everything that just stated right there along with the Pulse concept. It wasn't the idea of going out and partying too much and all of that. And everyone here in Orlando sees Pulse as something that along the lines of, it was kind of like Cheers. Everyone knew who you were. Mm-hmm. When you came in those doors, you were always welcomed, regardless of background. Walked right in. More times than not, the bartenders that you would see knew your drinks, they knew your name, they knew who you were, and they knew your stories, and you talked about those stories. So everyone's feeling a bit overwhelmed and still in shock from everything that's happened.
And what kind of conversations are you having with your friends, with the people who you help cope with now?
Right now, a lot of people are dealing with their friends, just trying to make sure that their friends are okay. I know that a lot of the list is still being posted, and so people are frantically just trying to make sure that everyone they know and care about is okay or accounted for.
Daniel, we're right in the middle of this, and you're here in New York with me. You're from Orlando. Your friends and family are there. It must be tough to be here.
Yeah. I mean, I actually have a couple of friends that are from Orlando that live up here. And I woke up this morning at around 4, and right when I woke up, they started releasing more names. And I literally this morning had to call 2 friends to tell them that the people they were looking for were on the list. I think it's just like, I'm at that point where I spent so much time crying yesterday that like my body will no longer produce tears. And it's just trying to find like that feeling of home. Because right now it just feels destroyed.
Earl, you're listening to Daniel's description of that feeling of home. You share a home with Daniel. You're both from the same town. your community, you're waiting on law enforcement, you're waiting for more answers, the list grows, you're dealing with family and with friends of victims in your work and in your personal life, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely, of course. So everyone's just connecting together and all the vigils that are happening, and you'll see there's been an outrageous pour of support from the city, from just family in general and friends, and everyone just coming together to pull through this, because it in such a moment of terror and a moment of you stepping back and trying to collect yourself, everyone's coming together to make sure that we're not in this alone, and nobody is in this alone, and everyone's got someone they can count on.
Daniel, do you, like I said in the intro to our discussion, this is about many, many things.
Right.
We're talking about as an attack on a haven for you when you were growing up. Are you at a place where you see this as a bigger issue, terror, all those other things? I mean, this is sort of about your home.
I think I also want to say, like, it was a hate crime, right? Like, let's not get rid of that. If we're talking about it being a terrorist attack or not, I think the reality is, like, it was a hate crime. And there's multiple pieces to that. One, it's Pride Month, right? But on top of being Pride Month, it's also Immigrant Heritage Month. So for it to be Pride Month, Immigrant Heritage Month, and this attack to be done at Pulse with so many young people of color there, right? Like, the names that are coming out are young people of color. All of that tied together on Latin night on top of that, like, I think it's just like thinking about all the intersectionality. And even in the studio, I'm wearing a shirt that says Bulletproof Black Lives Matter. And I think it's because this morning, that's the first thing that came to mind, was all the intersections that young people of color face every single day.
Daniel, you're here in the studio with me while all of this is going on at home. And I just want to take a minute to personally thank you for making the effort and probably going through the pain to share this with us at a time like this. It helps all of us. It helps me personally, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having
Daniel
me.
Daniel Leon Davis is an Orlando native. He frequented Pulse. You can read his piece about Pulse on Fusion. And Earl Johnson, you as well. I want to thank you for taking the time to talk us through this during this difficult time for your community.
Of course. And anything we can do on support, we have a hotline set up for any counselors and anyone that needs to speak to someone. And that number, just to throw that out there, is 407-822-5036, and we have that from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. So if anyone needs anyone to speak with, please give us a call.
Earl Johnson with the Zebra Coalition in Orlando. Thanks to you both.